You know, it's a pretty big honor to be invited to something, right? To be personally invited. It's a, especially when that thing is something pretty special. It's an honor and a privilege to do so. Say you were asked to accompany a group on some once-in-a-lifetime event or once-in-a-lifetime trip or something like that. Maybe you're asked to act in a theatrical presentation or something like that, or play on a sports team that only a few people get chosen for. Maybe you're chosen to represent other people, and you were selected to be that ambassador, to be that representative. Maybe you've been chosen to be a guest speaker. I can speak personally to that. That is quite an honor to be asked to go and speak somewhere, as the guest speaker. That's quite a privilege. I don't take that lightly. And the fact that we are invited implies several good and positive things. If you think about it, people have confidence in you. They have confidence in your abilities. They are willing to support who you are and what you are doing. They're willing to take risks for you, on your behalf, if you will, and often pay for the expenses involved in that risk-taking venture. Also, they did not have to invite you, but they did. You were probably selected from a larger group of people, selected above many other candidates. So when it comes to being invited into fellowship with God, think about all those things that we just said. We ought to have the same feelings of honor and privilege and gratitude. Here's where it's a little bit different, though. It's not because of what we have done that we were selected, that we were invited. It's because of what Christ has done. He has proven himself worthy. He has proven himself proven in ability. He has proven himself to be honored and capable of performing whatever needed to get done. And yet, he chooses to share that honor with all of us. He chooses to share that glory with those who accept his invitation into fellowship. What a tremendous privilege. And that's really what this is all about here. As we look into the Word of God, we're looking at an invitation. An invitation that has been extended to us, not by a congregation or by a church, but rather by God himself. We read here in 1 Corinthians 1:9, God is faithful, through whom you were called into fellowship with his Son, Jesus Christ our Lord. God has made promises to those whom he invited into fellowship with him, and he will not falter on those. He will not fail on those. He will not default on those promises. All who accept his invitation are those who are called, and those are expected to be faithful. As for himself, he is faithful to honor the responsibility and bear the expense of what it takes to invite us in the first place. In Luke chapter 14, verse 16 through 24, we have an illustration through one of Jesus' parables of the great kindness of God, of his generosity towards us. He calls many into fellowship with him. This is an invitation into life itself. And it ought to be regarded with the highest appreciation, the greatest priority. And as we read in Colossians 2, verse 7, we ought to be overflowing with gratitude for being invited to this feast. That's the good part. And yet, verse 18, it says, but they all alike began to make excuses. Jesus is directing this parable at Jews, because that's who he's talking to and talking about, who for centuries claimed to be waiting for their Messiah and for the regeneration of Israel and for their spiritual deliverance. And yet when that time came, when it was time to enter into the kingdom, they weren't prepared and they didn't respond. Instead, it says they all alike began to make excuses. Excuses are not reasons. A reason is a logical, intelligent explanation of something. A reason is based on facts. A reason has no ulterior motive. An excuse, however, is just the opposite. It is a distraction from the truth. It is a diversion away from the truth. It purposely and intentionally diverts attention from the facts and from reality. For example, because we really do need to illustrate these things, I think, to really make the point hit home. If you miss services, just putting in our contemporary situation, because your car engine blew up. Some of you are going like, yeah, that happened to me once, okay? Well, that's a reason for you having not been here. It's a factual explanation of what happened. It was due to circumstances beyond your control. You could not have foreseen that. You have no ulterior motive. No cover-up is necessary. However, if you miss services because you choose to pull a second shift and earn some extra money, even though this is all optional, and then you say, I cannot come because I had to work, well, that's an excuse. That is not a reason. An excuse because you could have come and you didn't have to work. It is a purposeful distraction or cover-up from the facts. Or suppose you are invited to someone's house for dinner, and you get a better offer in the meantime, between the invitation and the time the dinner happens. Say someone calls you up and says, I got a couple tickets to the Mariners game, or a couple tickets to, you know, some musical performance, or, hey, let's go to a movie I'm buying. You may invent an excuse, and the excuse will probably be along those lines of something came up. You're purposely avoiding factual information. You're purposely distracting from the facts. I've been in that place where I have had given an invitation and then someone told me that something came up. In fact, I've even been in a place where I've invited people and they say, I'll be there unless something comes up, which usually translates to, if I get a better offer, I won't be there. Okay, so you should never accept invite someone under those circumstances. People don't offer excuses because they want full disclosure of the truth, but the exact opposite reason. They don't want the full truth to be known. They don't mind if they disclose a version of the truth, but they have something to hide and they don't want to be exposed. I think we all know what we're talking about now. And while it's not an outright bald-faced lie, as someone might perceive that, it works exactly the same way. It deceives a person into believing something that was said was the absolute truth when in fact it was a cover-up or a distortion of that truth. For example, suppose a teenager is getting home late, it's 12:30 a.m., they're supposed to be home by 11 p.m. The real reason why they're late is because they didn't pay attention to the time, because they were gaming and socializing and so on, but they come home and they tell their parents, well, we didn't get to eat dinner until late, and the entire evening got delayed because of that. Well, that part of it might be true, but it wasn't the real reason for the tardiness, for the lateness. And it diverts attention from the fact that it was within that person's control to honor the curfew. So they use a little stringer over here like, well, this is the reason over here. Here's the facts. Here's the truth right here. They want you to believe in something outside of that, something instead of that. Back to the parable. These people in the parable that Jesus mentions, they did not give logical, factual explanations why they did not come. They gave excuses. They gave diversions. They gave cover-ups. It was implied there in the parable that they knew about the dinner well in advance, way ahead of time, and they had agreed to come. That's all part of the package of this parable. It wouldn't make sense if those things were not true. The invitations had been sent out earlier. The host knew how many people to fix dinner for, and he bore the trouble and the expense on his own. And then the time for dinner has arrived, and he says, now is the time to come to the feast. And not only do these people make excuses here, but they assume that these excuses they make will be acceptable to the dinner host, like he'll understand. So the first one says, well, I bought a field or a piece of land. Well, that's not a reason. That's just an excuse. You can look at a piece of land anytime. I don't think the land's going to care, honestly, if you were to delay you looking at it, right? I mean, you don't have to go checking it out right then at a time when you were committed to something else. And since when, then, does this thing here that is being used as the reason, which is really an excuse in this case, when does that prevent you from honoring your commitment? What he implied there was, my property is more important to me right now than your dinner. And then he says, and for that reason, I cannot come. Well, that's just a lie, because he could come, and he just chose not to. Or, I've bought 5 yokes of oxen. Oh, well, here's the same thing. Well, you can check out and test drive a couple of yokes of oxen anytime you want to. Basically, what he's saying is, once again, my possessions are more important than your invitation, more important than your dinner. And for this reason, I cannot come. Well, again, that's not true. That is a lie. Another man says, well, I've married a wife. The implication being that he married a wife after he got the invitation. So the invitation was accepted before he got married, but now he's using his marriage, using his wife, as a reason why he can nullify or cancel out the invitation. And for that reason, I cannot come. Well, actually, he could come, he just chose not to. And so therefore, it's not being honest. The host's response to all this is, I understand. You got things going on. I get that, right? Don't worry about it. It's no big deal. I mean, it's just a dinner after all. Something that I labored over, paid for, invited you to, went through all the trouble of preparing and so on, sent out my servants to ask you to come. It's no big deal, right? Actually, that's not the response at all. It says that the host was very angry, with righteous anger. And what Jesus is implying very strongly here is really the wrath of God toward those Jews who were not prepared and didn't get ready for his coming. If you read elsewhere, outside of this lesson and outside of our text right now, you will find that he's talking about the destruction of their nation, the destruction of their city, and the destruction of their temple, which actually historically happened in the revolt of the Jews, if you read that historically, from AD 66 to AD 70. And he leveled their city, he leveled their temple, he destroyed many of those Jews, took many others into captivity, and from that point forward, ended their relationship with him as a nation. People are still offering the same kind of excuses as to why they cannot serve God or keep his commitments to him. People use excuses the same as what we see here on the screen. They use excuses about their property, only now it's, maybe their home, or their possessions, things that they own, or maybe their relationships. But in every case, it is implied the things of this world are far more important to me right now than the nourishment and salvation of my own soul. And in essence, what they're doing is they're saying, hey, thanks God for inviting me, but something came up. And for that reason, I cannot come. When in fact, that's not a reason at all. That's just an excuse. So God is calling everyone today with his gospel. And this gospel is something that he prepared as a feast for the soul. This gospel was thousands of years in the making. We might even say it was eternal in the making, and as much as it began in the eternity before the world was created. It involves thousands of people, including even many angels and even the Son of God himself. God bore the expense and the trouble to make all of this possible. Are we listening to all this? Are we preparing ourselves to respond to such a grand invitation? Did you once respond to this invitation? Says, I'll be there. But then when the time came for you to actually perform, actually to show up, so to speak, or actually do something about that, maybe you didn't do the right thing. Maybe you didn't respond the right way. If you're not a Christian, you might say, well, I never agreed to come at all. So this really doesn't apply at all to my situation. Well, actually, this is something you don't need to agree to. By the virtue of the fact that you have been created by God, and God has given you your life and your soul and your existence, he has every right to expect you to come to the feast. He is your creator, after all. And if you are a Christian, well, then you've already promised him everything that you have, your possessions, your property, your friendships, your loyalty, even your own life. Think about that. Dare you or I now use those very same things to excuse ourselves from responsibility, to excuse ourselves from service? All the gifts that God gave us, now we're going to take those gifts and say, for this reason, all these things that you gave to me, this is why I cannot come. This is why I cannot respond. This is why I can't be responsible. This is why I can't serve. This is why I won't be there. People are still using a number of excuses. And just like in the parable, they assume perhaps that God will understand. And not only that, but that this is unacceptable to other Christians. In regard to hearing the gospel and responding to it, someone might say, well, I'm still in high school, I'm still in college. Please consider me excused. Is there a biblical prohibition against becoming a Christian until you graduate from high school or college? You do need to be old enough and mature enough to accept the responsibility. But here's some things to think about. If you're old enough to drive a car, and if you're old enough to hold a job, and if you're old enough to vote in our government system, and if you're old enough to be in the military system, then you're old enough to make this kind of decision. You're old enough. You do need to be mature enough. Hopefully you are by that age. But that has to be something to consider here. Someone says, well, I've got a boyfriend slash girlfriend slash fiance slash I have a wedding to plan for and prepare. Please consider me excused. Well, this is the same song and dance diversion from the parable. No one is saying that that other person in your life isn't important. Certainly they are, right? Especially if you're going to marry them. I would hope that they were important to you. But that's really not the point here. Christ must be more important than that person. That's what he's asking of you. And especially if you've made a decision to become a Christian already, Christ has asked you to make him more important, and you have agreed to that. We just looked at recently Luke 14, verse 26 there. You can see it probably on the page you have open there. If anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters and relatives and cousins and, you know, mailman and grocery store clerk and, you know, whatever else you want to throw in there. Yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And that doesn't mean that he doesn't want you. It means that he doesn't want to lose you to someone else who is inferior to him. This is not acceptable, especially if you've already committed. Someone says, and this is very popular, oh, I have children, and they take a lot of my time, please consider me excused. As if God doesn't know that children suck up a lot of your time, right? And that God didn't give you your children as a gift. He knows that. But here's a person who's putting their children before God, or even worse, using their children as an excuse as to why they can't serve God. God, I know you've given me all these children, but that's the reason why I can't serve you, is because you've blessed me so much. Remember what Adam said when God came to him there in the garden, and he says, you know, what happened here? And Adam says, well, that wife you gave me, see, she caused me to do this thing. And that's why I sinned against you, is because of the gift that you gave to me. And now here we're doing the same thing with kids. These gifts that you've given to me, this is why I can't be responsible to you. Don't you understand, God? Please consider me excused. See how that just doesn't really work there. And yet people are doing this all the time. That's just not acceptable, especially if you have already committed to God. Someone says, I have work. I hold a job, and for that reason, please consider me excused. Well, of course you need to be gainfully employed. The Bible supports that. You want to be industrious and working with your hands and being productive with your time and your talents that God has given you. Nothing wrong with that. But sometimes people choose schedules and accept schedules that conflict with their responsibilities to God, conflict with their attendance to church, conflict with things that they promised to at one time, conflict with invitations that they've been invited to. And it's not because they cannot come, although that's what they'll say, is I cannot come, but because the job is more important. They have made the job more important than their spiritual commitments and their moral responsibilities. Given Jesus' parable, how can anyone think that that's going to work? You can pull the wool over my eyes, of course. But you can't fool God. Someone says, I'm just so busy with my life. Do you know how many times we hear that and how many times we say that? I catch myself saying that. People say, Chad, how you doing? Oh, I'm just so busy. And then I stop and write. I hate saying that. I just hate saying that because it sounds so cliche and it sounds so like I'm trying to say that, you know, I can't squeeze anything else in, but honestly, I can if necessary. I can squeeze other things in because I do. You know, if someone calls up and says, hey, this is really important, I make time for that. Or if someone does present me with some tickets, you know, to a certain theatrical group or something like that, very particular about this, you know, then I can make time for those kinds of things. But here's what busy often means. People think that they're busy. People often think they're busy because they allow other people and unimportant circumstances to dictate their schedule. What I have found an interesting phenomenon over the years is that people will not say no to family and friends and other people. When the family calls, says, hey, I need you to be here, they won't say no to them, but they'll easily say no to God. They'll easily dismiss God. God says, I need you to be here, and we're like, eh, but my mom, my dad, my cousins, my relatives, my friends, you know, my peers, they're all calling me in different directions, so God, sorry about that, but please consider me excused. This is unacceptable to God. I mean, given the parable and everything else that we read in the New Testament, sometimes people make themselves busy because they're very ineffective and very inefficient in their planning. This is called poor time management. They don't know how to schedule things. This is not a genetic default here, okay? You weren't born this way. You chose to be this way. And remember that five-word phrase that I keep finding myself using more and more because it's applicable so often. What you allow will continue. What you allow will continue. If you allow yourself to be ineffective and inefficient with your planning and your time management, guess what? That's going to continue. And it's nobody's fault but your own if you're the one doing it. Sometimes people pack their schedule full with unimportant things and unimportant events, and God gets the leftovers. God is expendable. Church is expendable. Church classes are expendable. You know, what we're doing right here becomes expendable in such cases. So when you say you're busy, you got to be careful with that. You got to be careful that you aren't the cause of your own busyness. That this isn't a self-inflicted thing. Now, there are times when you're genuinely busy. I've been there. I know what that's like. You know, you do have a family to run and a job to do and things come up and cars to fix and houses to repair and water pipes to fix and that sort of thing. I get all that. But those are incidental, really, on the big picture. We're talking here about what goes on day to day. Someone says, I still need to learn more. Please consider me excused. Okay, fair enough. But what are you doing to learn more? If there is no plan of action and this is how you constantly respond to everything, then this is just an excuse. It's a diversion. It is dishonest and it is inaccurate. It's like saying to me, I'm working on it, when you're really not working on anything. Okay? Has anyone, don't raise your hand at this point, this would be embarrassing. Has anyone ever used that phrase, I'm working on it, when you really weren't working on anything? You were just trying to get someone off your back. You were just trying to hide the fact that you weren't working on anything, but you want them to think that you were working on it, so you say, I'm working on it, when really, in fact, you weren't working on it, but you don't want to look bad in their eyes, so you say things like that. You see why I didn't want you to raise your hand on that? Because probably all of us have done it. It's just human nature. At the same time, it doesn't mean that it works or that you should be doing this. Or suppose someone says, and this is what I get from Christians sometimes, well, you know, that's a good point. I need to study that out. What does that mean exactly? Does that mean you're going to go home and actually open your Bible, open a bunch of commentaries and reference works, and maybe make some phone calls and prayerfully study this thing out? Or does it mean, I don't know how to answer that, so maybe if enough time goes by, you'll forget the question. And then I won't have to deal with this at all. I've met both kinds of people, by the way. If you are a Christian and you are a member here, you need to understand that if you're going to study more, or if you're going to work on something, or if you're going to, you know, need more time, that's fine in itself. But if you're just making an excuse, that's not fine, because that's just on par with lying. Here's another one. It says, just not ready. Whether it's ready to, you know, to take on a new project or take on a new responsibility, or in the biggest sense here, I'm not ready to become a Christian. Well, if you're not a Christian and this is the truth, that you're not ready, well then so be it. I don't want to be responsible for baptizing someone that's not ready. And you ought to not be baptizing someone that's not ready. But if not ready is a euphemism for, I just don't care. I don't want to be responsible right now. And I don't want you to know that I don't care. And I don't want you to know that I don't want to be responsible. But I'm just going to tell you that I'm not ready, so that you'll get off my back and you'll stop asking me this question and you'll stop investigating me further. And you'll be thinking all the while as you walk away that, oh, okay, well, they're not ready, but they must be working on it. When the reality is you're not really working on anything. You're just carrying on with your life like you want to. My question is, what are you doing to become ready? Are you filling up your time with everything else so that you can't be ready? Or are you truly a God seeker, a truth seeker? What are you doing? You know, when we ask questions of other people, we expect straight answers. And God is the same way. When he asks us questions, he expects the truth. He expects straight answers. Specifically, he expects straight answers not just from us in that generic pool of Christians. He expects straight answers of every single one of you right here, and myself included. Every single one of us. Matthew chapter 5, verse 37, Jesus says, "Let your statement be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything beyond these is of evil." What does that evil mean? Well, it means evil intent. There's something evil or even dark and satanic behind that. It talks about an evil motive. If we attempt to dodge or obscure the truth behind a cloak of deception and distractions or wordplay, that's just another form of lying. We're told, Jesus says in John 8:44, that Satan is the father of lies. And if we're lying like Satan lies, and we become in fellowship with Satan himself, and we speak like he speaks, and we just cannot ever deem that acceptable. On the other hand, if you truly are not ready or not prepared to become a Christian, or, as I said, take on some other responsibility that maybe the shepherds or others are laying on you, and you're just saying, no, I'm just not ready, it's not wrong to say so, as long as it's the truth. As long as it's not an excuse. It's a factual statement. I am not ready. Okay, that is acceptable. Or if you have become a Christian and you find yourself struggling, it's not an excuse to state the truth of that and to admit the difficulty. There's no shame in that. If you really are working on it, and you're giving your heart and soul into that, working on it, well, then that's not an excuse. That's a fact. You are actually working on it. But there has to be something done. I've given the illustration before of you taking your car to a mechanic. And the car is there for a week. You call the mechanic up. You say, "Is my car done?" And the mechanic says, "I'm working on it." And he hasn't touched the car all week. You know what you feel like right there, don't you? You feel angry, and you feel deceived, and you feel put out, and you feel like you're taken advantage of. Well, it's the same sort of thing. When you do that, your fellow brothers and sisters in Christ, that's what they feel when you do that to them. And that's what God feels like when you do that to him. So don't do that. If it's factual, if it's accurate, if it's based on reasons, logical explanations, so be it. But if it's something else, it's of evil. There's an evil intent behind that. The point is, that God wants to say it like it is. We're told in Ephesians 4:15 to be speaking the truth in love. 10 verses later, he says, "Speak truth, each one of you, with his neighbor. Just as God speaks only truth to us, never lies, never deceives, that's how he wants us to speak to him." What that means then is be honest with God and tell him exactly what is in your heart. He already knows, of course, but he's waiting for you to come to terms with that yourself. He wants to hear it from your own mouth, so to speak. He wants you to put it in words so you will admit that. You will confess what is in your heart. Yes, he already knows that, but that's not the point. He wants you to own up to that responsibility. And you owe him that. We're told in Matthew 7, verse 7 through 8, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock, it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives. He who seeks finds. And to him who knocks, it will be opened. If you want God to open or shut doors to lead your life in a certain direction, then let him decide what that is and what that will be and which doors need to be open and closed. But you got to participate in that. You have to be honest about this. Is this really what you want? Or are you just saying the prayer and just doing your own thing? James chapter 1, verse 5 through 7 here. If anyone lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, and it will be given to him. But you have to ask in faith without any doubting, because if you doubt there, which means in this case, in the context here, if you ask over here saying that you believe, but you really don't believe, well, then he goes on to say that you're a double-minded man. And he says, don't think that that person should expect anything from God because he doesn't believe in God or the prayer, the act of praying. So be honest. Don't pretend to ask God for help and then resist God. I mean, we probably all have done it. God, please help me. Please help me. No, I don't want that help. Didn't want that particular thing that you're having me to do, but, you know, and so we just sit there and we stiff arm God there. Ask with full sincerity. Ask with humble faith. Believe that he wants to help you and that he will help you. Because that's the God that we serve. Willing and able to help. You also have to be honest with yourself. Don't try to make excuses for yourself. Don't talk yourself into something that you really don't believe is true. When you get comfortable lying to yourself, you will be very comfortable lying to others, and you will find yourself lying to God. And pretty soon, lies and truth all just kind of start to mingle together until you can't tell the difference between the one from the other. It just all becomes a blur. It is possible to convince yourself that lies will be truth and truth will be lies. God will not stop you from doing so. I could go to scriptures to show you that if we had time. Satan will actually help you to do so because he is the father of lies and he loves it when people imitate him. So we have to have the courage, all of us, each of us has to have the courage to accept and embrace the truth no matter what it says, no matter what it requires of us, no matter where it leads us. If choosing to follow Christ takes you away from life as you have come to know it, well then so be it. That life as you have come to know it, if indeed Christ is leading you away from it, is leading to your destruction anyway. He wouldn't lead you away from it if it were otherwise. The fact that he is leading you away from certain habits and behaviors and lifestyles and decisions means that those things are ruining you rather than helping you. Be honest with others. No one can say that they're drawing near to God by pretending to be something that they're not. That just makes sense to me. It's biblical, it's sound, it's logical, it's factual. You are probably very disgusted with hypocrites, people who say one thing and mean another. You're probably very disgusted and put out by those people. Well, then don't become one. Don't be that hypocrite. You no doubt want people to be honest and forthright with you. Well, Matthew 7:12 says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So do the same to them. Be straightforward and honest with them. In 2 Corinthians 13:5, Paul says, examine yourself to see whether or not you are in the faith. Put yourself to the test. Use the word as the standard. How do you measure up? How do I measure up? I have to be honest with God. I have to be honest with myself. And I have to be honest with you. If we're going to make this thing work, this thing we call salvation work. Now, in the parable, while obviously it had a very negative outcome for those first invited, don't forget that it started out positively. If you read the parable again in verse 16 and 17, a man was giving a big dinner, and he invited many. And at the dinner hour, he sent a slave to those who had been invited. Come, for everything is ready now. There's a sense of anticipation, and a sense of joy, and a sense of implied celebration. We don't know why, but nonetheless, he's giving a big dinner. And there's no sense that this man here is inviting these people because they deserve to be invited necessarily. There's nothing special about the people themselves. They don't appear to be worthy because of great deeds or heroic efforts or merit on their part. He's just inviting a whole bunch of people saying, come to the feast. I'm taking care of the expenses. I'm providing the food. He doesn't ask them to bring anything. Out of my own goodness, my own kindness, my own generosity, I will bear the trouble for this feast. I'm just asking you to come. The dinner is a free gift. The food was made ready and prepared. All you have to do is show up. In reality, this does represent God's kindness with regard to the gospel. We're told in Ephesians 2, verse 8 and 9, you're very familiar with this verse, no doubt. For by grace you have been saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it is the gift, the dinner feast of God. Not as a result of works, meaning your works, so that no one may boast. It's a gift of God, something we do not deserve, something we did not prepare ourselves for through, again, heroic efforts, valiant deeds, etc. We cannot invite ourselves into fellowship. This is all God's doing. All we do is show up. God calls you and I out of his love for our souls and therefore serving our best interests, because that's what godly love is all about. Remember last week's lesson, we talked about this. And he wants you, meaning every single one of you, and every person outside of you, okay? In other words, every single person. He wants everyone to be with him in his house forever. Do you want to really excuse yourself from that? Why would you do that? That doesn't even make sense. God is faithful to honor the invitation, to honor what he invited you to. Are you going to be faithful to him? Because we don't deserve to be invited into God's fellowship. We are unworthy. We are all fallen people. How dare we cling to the world? How dare we cling to worldly possessions? How dare we cling to worldly schedules? How dare we cling to other fallen people? And then say of those things, for those reasons, I cannot come. Please consider me excused. The Son of God has paid the price for our eternal dinner feast in heaven. The Spirit of God has provided the invitation. The Father himself waits patiently for an honest and grateful response. But be sure of this, that his wrath will burn against anyone who says, I'm not really interested in you or your offer or your invitation. I'd rather do something else instead. That's a sobering lesson that Jesus is providing. There's a great outcome for those who finally came, but it wasn't those who were invited. It wasn't those who should have been there. We need to make a decision as to what we're going to do and how we're going to respond to God's invitation. And now that I'm offering our invitation, you need to make a decision as to how you're going to respond to the gospel call right now. If there's anyone needs to come forward this morning, this would be a good time for you to do so. As we stand and sing the song, Richard is Selected. Come forward if you need to.